Welcome to the Private Investment Podcast brought to you by Limited Partners Club. We bring together private sector investors to tackle subjects like wealth creation, capital preservation, and legacy. We hope you enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's meeting, Red Flags When Co-Investing. I hope you're having a fantastic week. My name is Coburn Shepik. I'm very excited for this topic that we're going to be covering in today's call. And the reason why we've decided to cover this topic is because, for one, anytime someone is allocating, an investor is allocating to investment, we obviously want to be sure that the operators that we're co-investing with are top-notch, the best of quality, have the best character, and have a great track record and are able to navigate tough economic times like we're about to go into in the coming short months. And so what had happened, to back up a little bit, after the great financial crisis, 2007-2008, we have had one of the longest periods, expansion periods in history. So typically a cycle lasts approximately 10 years, which is historically about average. So people can expect a cycle about every 10 years, and we're going on 2023 here in a few short weeks. And so that would be, 14 years, hypothetically, that we've not received a correction like we are due for. And so aside from the longest expansionary period that existed before the pandemic, the pandemic sort of pushed that period down the road further. Now it's a few years later, and we're about to start paying for this. So what had happened was, after this massive expansionary period, then COVID kicked in, there was massive stimulus. And after asset prices inflated so much during that long period of time up until 2018, then asset prices inflated even more once there was a pandemic and the economy shut down and there was stimulus and investing and pent up demand for a lot of different things with everything, including real estate, including all types of assets. And during this whole time of expansion and with the pandemic, we had interest rates at extremely low levels, nearly zero at one point. And so there was free money. And when there's cheap money like that, asset prices explode. And so what investors have been allocating into over the past few years are a lot of them inflated values. And on top of all this, there was a ton of new operators that have popped up, and they're taking risks, buying buildings, value-add properties, for example, in secondary markets at top dollar. And so some of you may be involved in some of these types of deals or may not. But the point is that if you are in these types of deals, we want to talk about some of the things that you should be aware of. And moving forward for future allocations, some of the red flags that you should look for, and really what you want to be looking for in an operating partner. So I'm excited for this call today. Super important subject. So a few of the topics we're going to talk about, we always start with the state of the market. And if you've been on our weekly meetings here, this might sound repetitive, but the facts are that there's a lot going on in the economy. We want, if you have not been involved in this conversation, and everybody understand what's going on in the greater economy with inflation, et cetera, and we're going to talk about that. If you've been on our call last week, it might sound repetitive. So if you want to wait around until the topic today, totally understandable. After the state of the market, we'll get into today's topic of red flags when co-investing. Then at the end here, I've got an exclusive invite for Limited Partners Club that I'm happy, that I'm really excited to share with you. So starting with the state of the market, as we know, there is a massive inflation problem, and the Fed is using its tools, its few tools that they have to combat inflation. So again, target inflation 2%, we're just below 8%, which is on the CPI. And true inflation, if we look back at how inflation is measured back in the 80s, inflation is potentially is a lot higher than what we're seeing in the data today with the data tools that we use. And so the goal of the Fed is to bring down inflation, obviously. And looking back in history, what had happened this today, what's happening today is the worst it's been since the late 70s. And so in the 70s, inflation got out of control. The Fed took very long to respond. And then there was stagflation for a period. Inflation stayed around for much longer than they had hoped and accounted for. And therefore, we went into a pretty dark recession. And so the Fed is now learning from their trial and error and taking a very aggressive approach to the inflation problem today. So year to date, interest rates, the Fed has raised interest rates 375 basis points, which is 3.75% year to date, which is one of the fastest rates of the fastest rate of increases in a period of time. And so looking at taking a zoom out as it relates to interest rates, we're still historically low as far as the average rate. And back to this recent period of expansion that we're still on the tail end of, which is now turning, which we'll get into, interest rates have been extremely low, lower than they've ever been before. And now this boost, this rapid increase is putting major stress on the inflated values that have been bid up over the past 10 years. So it's December, early December. The Fed has lifted interest rates by 375 basis points. And here in the next week or so, I believe the 13th of December, the Fed is going to lift rates again. Now they've talked about sort of decreasing the aggressiveness, but still remain firm on 2023, holding rates higher, as well as increases in early 2023 as well. And so we expect another 50 basis points here in the next week. That'll put us at 425 basis points, which is extreme. Aside from how low rates have been in the recent expansionary period, as well as the pandemic, nearly zero, that level of increase, no matter where rates have been, are going to put massive pressure on all types of businesses and deals and households. Everything is going to get is going to feel it. And so many things, as we know, are already feeling it. We're already seeing a ton of layoffs. And the reason for this is because companies need to cut their expenses. And so with the cost of capital going up, that increases the cost of their operation. And with a looming recession coming soon, corporations are de-risking themselves by cutting expenses, laying off thousands and thousands of people. So aside from that, we're already seeing housing, which is one of the biggest parts of inflation. And there's a lag effect, as we know. So housing is slow to move until it's not, of course, but it's slow to move, meaning that from when rents are decreased, when asking rents are decreased or when new leases are decreased, the time it takes to be collected in the data and presented to the Fed and the public, there's a lag there. And so, and it takes time for leases to renew, et cetera. So the lag effect in the housing market is huge, which is part of the problem, but we're already seeing housing declining very quickly. Now, looking historically, as far as how housing has performed this year to last year, it's decreasing. How housing has performed this year to several years ago, it's a different story because the massive increase in values that happened over the past few years were outrageous. And so what we're seeing now is not even close to what's to come, in our opinion. And keep in mind that I am no economist. We're not economists here. We're looking at the data and having an open discussion based on what we see, based on what's happened in the past, and based on what we can assume knowing these data facts. So the question is, are we going into a recession? Are we in a recession? The answer is in a gray area because the definitions are a little bit unclear right now in this cycle. But likely, we are headed for a hard landing in the coming months. And that's what we'll see. That's what we're planning for. And unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of people that are affected. And whether you are affected or not, the point is that the world in every aspect runs in cycles. Everything. The human body runs in cycles, especially the economy, especially the world runs in cycles, as we know, right? And so during these cycles of sort of recalibration, new pricing discovery, new opportunities, there is a good side of this. And so my goal is to help you position yourself to be on the good side of this. The opportunities that will come from this cycle are unlike almost anything that we've experienced in history because of the level of debt we have today. So it could get very, very ugly, and it will get ugly, but there's a good side of this because the ugliness is where massive, massive wealth is created by buying up the distressed pieces, businesses, real estate that operators at many different levels have created an opportunity for the ones that are prepared to buy at pennies on the dollar and reap the rewards of the next cycle. That's how this world works. And so I want to, by having these meetings, by having this discussion today on this topic, I want you to be prepared for what's to come, because it only happens times like this. I think I just said this, but times like this again only happen a few times in our entire lives. And so when these come, we can't sleep on them because they don't come often. So that's where we're at. We're going to keep having this discussion as things develop and as this all unfolds, and it will unfold. And it's a matter of time for the real distress to occur. And I hope that you're not on the bad side of it, but if you are, and if this will affect you, it affects all of us, but there is a good side to take, and we need to be optimistic about the opportunities and the strategies that we'll use to capitalize on what's to come in the very, very near future. And keep in mind, as far as what that timeline looks like, things do take time. During 2007, 2008, the market crash, the Fed was lifting rates in 2005 because they knew the market was inflated. So that was a 2-3 year period before a wave of foreclosures started to happen. Now, keep in mind that it wasn't until 2009, 2010 where the mess was kind of started to clear, right? So it's a 5-year period almost where hell broke loose. There's a wave of foreclosures, there's a wave of bankruptcies, and then new capital came in to clean up the mess. This is, it takes time, you guys. So what we're about to go into, keep in mind that we didn't start raising interest rates this time in this cycle until March this year. So we've got some time. The distress will start to present itself. It already is through the creative ways sellers are acting to unload these assets. And so the Fed started lifting rates in March this year. We are now just starting to see some of the sellers, some of the operators panicking. We're in panic mode right now, both on the operator level and on the investor level. We've seen in recent articles this week even, and I'm sure you've seen it as well, is that investors are wanting to pull out, withdraw their investment in some of these larger REITs. And we've seen some of the operators are now putting a cap on withdrawals because of the amount of there's a liquidity crisis. So this is the beginning of the debt or the distress that's appearing. And what's next is actually these properties, as it relates to commercial real estate, these properties going back to the lender. Then we've got foreclosures, then we've got a wave of bankruptcies. So the distress, the level of distress is going to take some time. We're already starting to see the beginning of it. Okay, let's get into our topic today, which is red flags when co-investing. We're talking about allocating alongside specific operators and what we want to look for in order to be confident in the operating partners that we have. And so at every level, there is a vetting process. And my goal for this topic is to understand what to look for and really what should be, how you should vet the operating partners. So number one is, and I know we're out of order here, if you're looking at the screen, number one is this track record, which is the most important, one of the most important subjects to look for. Like without even knowing somebody, you can see somewhat of their track record, or you can have an understanding of the track record. How many deals have they done? What types of deals have they done? What markets are they in? Have they invested in or built in or operated in? And so let's use an example for this subject. And that's, let's call it industrial development in Phoenix, where I'm located. So if we're looking at allocating to an industrial development in Phoenix, and we're looking at operators and we're looking at the track record, and they've done a lot of development deals in Phoenix. They've done a lot of industrial deals in Phoenix. They've got thousands of square foot under that they've completed. And that's just one good example. They've also navigated through down cycles. They also were in business and were successful in business during the last financial crisis, during 2008. They should have gone through two down cycles. So they should have gone through, they should have years of experience in their network, in their immediate team that has successfully navigated these tough economic times. Because anybody, any operator, any investor can do well when there is cheap money, low interest rates, and there is demand. Anybody can succeed. So if you were buying, pardon my French, but if you were buying shitty apartments at extremely low cap rates in 2018, you would have aside from the in 2019, let's call it, you would have won in the short term. You would have won because the massive amount of cheap capital going into the market, and the demand for the pent up demand for allocating and seeking yield and buying property, you would have increased the value without doing anything. And so the importance of navigating tough times is because when interest rates rise and the economy turns the other way, the ones that have experienced those times are the ones that are going to last. The others are going to get washed away. So the track record. And so let's look at a poor example of this. If we're looking at an industrial development deal in Phoenix, and this operator they've never done an industrial deal before. They've never done they may have done development, but it was a single family. It was a single family development in Provo, Utah. It's a completely different market, completely different asset class, completely different tenants, completely different time. There's no reason to trust in that process. There's no track record there. They might have a great track record of single family development in another market, which is real estate, but it's not in the same basket. And so a track record that is aligning with the specific markets, the specific deal, deal type, the specific project profile, and the specific sub asset class is certainly key. And now the second sort of, what I would say, the second tier here in what we're looking for is, which is not on this list, because it's really the most important. But a track record is, you can see it. You can see it's on paper. Is someone's character, right? And I know a lot of the values that go into character are listed here, like communication and transparency, which we'll talk about. But the level of character. And now here's what I like to say. If you cannot trust someone with your wallet or with your spouse, not together, separately or together, then chances are you do not want to invest with those types of people. Now, I know this is sort of a gray area, but there's some level of emotional intelligence when you know somebody and meet somebody and how they present themselves and how they carry themselves into a relationship. And for those that have that gut feeling with somebody, those are the times you listen to your gut. I usually listen to my wife because my gut gets rumbly sometimes. But people have this emotional intelligence. They can recognize who people are. They can see right through them. And so there's a level of gut that is involved in what you want to look for. You want to look for good people that have good track records. Good people without track records is a no-go. So good people with great characteristics and values and that follow strong principles in their life is one of the most important things. So I'm moving all over the screen now. If you're on, you know, these are the highlights of what we want to look for and what we want to look out for when co-investing. So the next is skin in the game, okay? And this goes along with involvement, but skin in the game is, and we're jumping a little bit out of order here, so bear with me, but skin in the game, other known as the co-investment, that the operator, the amount of capital that they're putting into the deal as well. This shows conviction. Okay. If you're investing in a deal, let's use our example. You're investing in an industrial development deal in Phoenix with a great operator. but they're only putting, they're not putting very much in. There's not much equity they're putting into the deal. That is a red flag, right? Because if they were putting their own, if they were writing a check out of their pocket, that shows belief. That shows that there's something that they trust the deal as well. If it's all syndicated equity, then they're taking massive risks. And aside from how much equity they're putting in, we want to know who the equity is coming from. Is it out of their checkbook? Is it all syndicated from the retail investors? They don't know any of the people involved. Is it young adults on off of Instagram that are vulnerable to this investment? Or is it their family's money? Is it their mother-in-law's money, right? So if it was family money, we know in most cases that nobody wants to lose their mother-in-law's money. So the level of conviction there is, it shows belief. So we want to see skin in the game. We want to see 10, 15% or up to 20% into the deal from the operator. And now a lender is going to require skin in the game anyway, of course. They need to see some skin in the game from the general partners. Now, how much is syndicated, how much is their own money, and how much is their family, their close networks money? That's what we really want to know. Next is involvement. Okay. The people that are involved in these deals and at what level is so important. If you've got somebody that is doing a project, but they've also got a full-time job doing something completely different, they are limited to the amount of time that they can put into executing the project and also making sure that their investors are taken care of. So we want to see somebody that's all in. This is all they got. And they're putting full effort into this. If they've got other side hustles or a job going on at the same time, that's a potential red flag, and we don't want to see that. Next is communication. Just like any relationship, of course, we want good communicators. We want to see people that are over communicating, right? You can always ignore people, but the constant, regular, planned communication is so important. Just like any relationship with your friends, with your spouse, with your family, we want to see good communication. Without it, relationships fall. So regardless of the project and the track record, if somebody can't communicate, we simply just do not want to work with that person. We don't want to be around them. It's not a good relationship. So communication, overly communicative is a must. It's a deal breaker without it. And next is transparency. You know, and this comes in along with communication as well, but being transparent in deals, even when it's hard to communicate, is we want to see that, right? Bad news is better than no news. And as weird as that sounds, we need to hear as investors what's going on. So we're looking for transparency, which is a characteristic trait in specific people, specific teams. We need to have transparency. What is going on? What is going to be done about this? So for someone to say, "I don't know," rather than hide the facts and create false information, we always want somebody to be honest and transparent. This is obvious, but it can be shown in many different ways. When times get hard, especially like now, as we're in this crazy economic time, this is all going to shine because these deals, a lot of these deals in today's world that a lot of smaller investors are involved in, we're going to see who, right, the character is going to start to shine. So when, for example, if somebody's got a tough deal they can't get out of, the value is not sustainable, cap rates have decompressed now, and transparency is going to be shown right now who the good characters are in this world. And so for those of you that have that are involved in some of these deals, you'll start to see investors or operators start to show the bad news and show what's going to be done and show how we're working through this and what we're doing and what the risk is, rather than saying everything's fine, there's still a massive demand, nothing's going to happen, don't worry about it. We want to hear the bad news. And lastly, that we'll talk about here as it relates to the subject is underwriting performas. When we go into a deal, these deals are underwritten with fancy professional modeling, okay? But there's still a human aspect, of course. This isn't computerized. Humans are writing performas. Our operating partners are underwriting this deal and making projections, which are assumptions based on how this is going to perform by what key events we're executing and how the market is performing today. That's the only information that we know, and that's what we're betting on. And so the level of aggressiveness or lack thereof on the performa is important to understand. It's important to see. And this, that's why passive investing is sort of this gray area. This is not, nothing's totally passive, because you as the investor, us as investors, we need to have knowledge or have a network of that has knowledge that can help us proof the underwriting. If we're going into a deal, let's call it a multifamily deal, and these operating partners are suggesting a 10% increase in rents for the next 5 years, year over year, that would be based on what they've seen during COVID, right? During the pandemic, rents went up 20%, 26% in some cases. And so they're accounting for that increase. But we know, if you look at history, rents don't rise that much. And so their aggressive modeling is going to kill them at the end, and they're going to be over their head during that investment. And so we want to look for conservative underwriting, but not even conservative. It's about realistic underwriting. What's realistic? What has happened in history? And what is the outlook of the investment based on what we're buying today, based on what the market's at today, based on the external factors with rising interest rates and demand increasing and everything else? What realistic assumptions can we make for this investment for a period of time? The exit cap rate, the exit underwriting is totally unknown. We can make fair assumptions, but what happens 5 or 7 years down the road is totally out of control. So that's why operators and investors need to focus on the now based on today's market price, based on today's rents, and get a good deal based on today, along with aligning with all the external factors like interest rates and everything else. So I hope this kind of covered some of the important things that we all should be looking out for when allocating. And mostly we're investing in the jockeys here. And so it's important to get in the right room with quality people. And that'll lead me to the final topic here, which is an invite to our community. We have established this community for investors to get into a room with like-minded families that are allocating to private opportunities, real estate, venture, private equity, anything without a ticker. And we want to create a space for investors to be able to come together, share insights, discover deals, and talk about these subjects, tackle these subjects like we're talking about today. And so I want to invite you in. There's no cost. You can apply to join, request to join. We'll be doing this regular meeting, as well as hopefully we'll be planning our first in-person event in the coming months. So you can request to join at limitedpartnersclub.com. That's limitedpartnersclub.com. Thank you so much for your time today. My name is Coburn Shepik. I'll see you next time.